If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to a post-game with your Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. With me, as usual, is Jeremy Schilling. You can find him on Twitter /X at JT Schill with two L's, 20. Rough series to start. Red Sox dropped 2 of 3, losing one, getting robbed in another. I'm going to let you go first because it's going to be just a really rough rant for me. So I want you to go first.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by Friday night coming off the long flight and trip. They go out there and they get the first one. I was very optimistic. Game two, there's some, umpiring that goes in here, some review that goes in here. At the end of the day, his hand came off second base and the glove was on him at the time, so he's out. That's the way the rule's written. I know some people have talked about having some sort of grace for a pop-up slide or something like that where the hand or the foot or whatever still, on slash adjacent to the bag. But at the end of the day, his hand came up, the glove was on him, he's out. If you want to talk about managing and SLA earlier in the year on a brutal tag up the third where he did a pop-up slide and he was losing contact with the back. The current game, the leeway to slide like that anymore. Once you make contact with the bag, you have to find a way to maintain it throughout until you call time and get on your feet. So it's the little things that add up in series like this against good teams. And that's exactly what happened today. Frankly, I thought the game was over when, and I always butcher his name, but
Arise.
I thought Duran took Duran took a terrible route to that ball. The only thing I thought in the moment was if that was Rafaela, he would have ran it down. But the way Cease was going, at one point I think he struck out 4 guys in a row and it was just mowing people down. This wasn't like getting called third strikes. It was like overmatched. I was actually pleasantly surprised to see that they were able to get to him and get him out of the game there. I think it was in the sixth. No, it was whatever. The inning doesn't matter. They got to him and then they got two back. bases chucked. And I almost texted you, Charlie, but I didn't want to be negative Nancy and say, this is the exact moment where the Red Sox forget to hit. Like the Padres have us right where they want us because they have the bases loaded, which is going to require some situational baseball. They don't even put the ball in play. Bases loaded, zero outs. They don't put the ball in play. And they, except for Yoshida at third, they had speed on the bases. So you hit a ball, a fly ball to right, you're first and third, one out. You hit another fly ball. It's a one-run game, and you're in this thing with outs to go. And as it were, they just, the game was, you know, over at that point, essentially. The Padres added a run. So look, this is what happens when you play good teams. You know, they're going to avoid mistakes. They're going to let you make them. The Padres, frankly, threw the ball better and made more plays, made less mistakes, if that's how you want to put it. And look, it's disappointing. It was a fun series with a bunch of talent. You know, really, I thought Cease was awesome today. Yeah. You know, you get to see Machado and Tatis Jr. And so it was a really fun series. It would have been a lot better if we won another one. This by no means sinks this team, in my opinion. They go back to Houston today. I think we play tomorrow. And we're coming off a sweep of the Astros. I don't expect that to happen again. But you go win that series, you're right back on track. So I don't think this is like doom and gloom. What the heck happened? I think there's some things they need to clean up. And I think Crochet's coming up here. So I'm still optimistic. It's frustrating. I get some of the things you're about to talk about. I get why it's frustrating. I might have a little bit of a different take, but I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to say I'm going to get to that play at second base. That's going to be part of it. I actually was at the game on Saturday night. So I want to go back to Saturday before we talk about today, because today it just looked like they were deflated. That's it. Cease got pulled into the seventh inning after the first two batters reached base. And then the very first pitch that Jason Adam threw was at Yoshida. So whether that was intentional or not, I think it was borderline, I don't know, gutless. Why? Like you're now loading up the bases. Yesterday's loss never should have been a loss for so many reasons. And it's before that play at second base. You absolutely jumped on their starter. King was coming back from the IL, had the bases loaded. You have one out. You've got to try to get one more run in. You've got to do it. Your run can't just be because Manny Machado's an idiot and try doing the hidden ball trick when Wandy Peralta was already on the rubber setting, because that is a balk. As soon as you step off, that's a balk. Like that was it. It was a dumb decision. I get why they tried to do it. It would have been hilarious if they doubled him off at first base earlier today. He ended up stealing a base against us. Manny Machado loafs it to first base. He's just a lazy player at times. But the issue that I'm having is, in general, just with the calls, I have never seen so many players back-to-back-to-back walked. It happened multiple times in this series. I've never seen it in a game where almost both teams walked three guys in a row. We walked four guys in a row. Lucas Giolito is the definition of a professional. He absolutely owned it. He said he takes full accountability for how he threw in the game. He threw 55 of his 97 pitches for strikes. That's 56.7%. That is not going to cut it. Here's the bad news. In that inning, in the first three batters, he had four balls and seven strikes. And then against Jackson Merrill, Xander Bogaerts, Ryan O'Hearn, and Ramon Laureano, none of which terrify me, right? They're not superstars. Xander Bogaerts is like a star that's kind of fallen a little bit. And then against Boston and over the last week and a half, he's actually done really, really well and earned whatever contract he's getting right now, which is ridiculous. I don't understand how C.B. Buckner missed the two pitches he did. He missed a blatant one against Xander Bogaerts on 3-1. He missed the very first one against Jackson Merrill. And at that point, if you're Lucas Giolito, you're facing the San Diego Padres, one of the best teams in baseball, and C.B. Buckner, one of the worst umpires in baseball. I don't know what C.B. stands for. I'm sure it's not anything nice, but it was just... call balls? Like, I just call balls? I don't know what CB stands for. He was absolutely atrocious. In those four batters, he had walked him. It was four. He threw one strike on the first two batters. So you're looking at it on paper. Giolito then went 16 balls to 5 strikes on those 4 batters, and he looked deflated when he walked Xander. And I told you before the show, and I'm going to say it again, I rewatched this game twice. I was there and I watched it again, and I watched Don Orsillo word for word say, chuckling as he said it, and I love Don, "Did you see how much of the plate that pitch caught?" And his counterpart said, "Wow." CB did not give a damn about that game. It was absolutely disgusting. It was atrocious. Lucas Giolito has never been that inconsistent. 6 walks in 4-plus innings with only 1 strikeout? Get out, dude. There's a chance that Xander Bogaerts maybe would have grounded out. Maybe we're out of that inning. We're unscathed, and we don't have to deal with not one, but 2 runners getting walked, and then, or 2 batters getting walked, allowing 2 runners to score. I've never seen that happen. I've never seen 2 runners back-to-back get walked, allowing 2 runs to come in. What else do you want to know? That play at second base, when David Hamilton, who really serves only one purpose, I'm not adding him as a defensive replacement, and I'm certainly not adding him to be a hitter, as he so eloquently displayed trying to bunt not once, not twice, but 3 times, and it didn't work out. And he bunted foul and struck out, and it really nerfed the chances for the Red Sox. When you go into second base, absolutely you have to keep the foot or your glove or the mitt or whatever it is that players are using now. It doesn't matter. I don't give a damn. I'm fired up because Xander Bogaerts tripped up and pushed him off gently off the bag. So I do have an issue with that, and that is a rule that needs to be changed. If the fielder makes contact in addition to the initial touch and it looks like he's falling over, causing the runner to be off the bag, that should be dead, because Jose Ramirez dealt with Tim Anderson in the most swift and appropriate way possible. Tim Anderson was a thug, moron, POS. I'm so glad he's out of baseball. He was disgusting, disrespected the game, and Jose Ramirez sat him down like the school child that he is. I'm over that. Xander Bogaerts one day will have his too. And it sucks because I like Xander. We're not going to sign him for the contract that he signed in San Diego. So have fun playing in San Diego for the rest of your career. That happened. And then you have we talked about the bunt. You can't do that. We intentionally walked a runner in the 10th inning. And I look at my wife, we're sitting at the game, and I go, the Red Sox lost this game because all of the pitchers that we have, we don't have enough firepower to win this game. And the bats that we need aren't going to be enough to win this game. The relievers for the Padres, the relievers struck us out 14 times in 8 innings. That's insane. Estrada had 5, Miller had 3, Suarez had 2. I mean, it was one after the other. I think Morjon had another 1 or 2 in there as well. It was one thing after another. It didn't matter what was happening. Then you fast forward to today's umping. Roman Anthony had a called strike 2 in the 6th inning. If that's a strike, Xander should have had a strike. And then Toro, strike 3 looking with 1 out and the bases loaded in the 7th inning. If that's a strike, Xander had a strike. It was just abysmal with the play calling. Now, you talked about Duran also earlier, not making a very strong play, right? Luis Arraez, not a good fielder, not the fastest hitter, but he has the slowest bat speed, doesn't strike out, gets singles and doubles, and that's his thing. Duran, to your point, did not make the best run and play at that ball. That's why 2 runners came in to score. I do think the sun had something to do with it, because there was that play between, I'm not sure if it was short and left field, but there was something else in there where left fielder came in, the ball ended up falling in, and I think it was Willie Abreu got a single in left field for it. But at the end of the day, those mistakes can't happen. You've got to be better. You can do all the damage you want against teams that are not good. But you've also got to somewhat be competitive and try. This team in game 3, they didn't deserve to win at all. They didn't. Rant over. I would love to hear your input.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of going after the umpiring or the refereeing or whatever the sport is, because it's just one of those things that's kind of outside your control. I did wake up this morning and look up the ump report, and I actually went through it with some detail. And he was bad, but he was actually bad in the favor of the Red Sox by a half run. Now it's not excusable. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
right.
I was looking at it too.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't do enough in this series to go take the series. It's extremely frustrating. I know Jules and Johnny and some of the usual cast of characters, George White, that like to hang out and watch, and we appreciate the feedback. Yeah, it's a series like this where some of the holes really kind of that they didn't plug at the deadline kind of were felt, right? Right-handed at bat. Where Wong was going to hit in that bases loaded situation. He ultimately didn't, but it didn't matter because it was Toro. But if you have another at right-handed at bat, if you had a better solution at first base, you can't help but wonder who would that have been in that spot. The Giolito Bayo thing, both were good early or okay early, but couldn't get out of their start. And so, you know, we're down going into the bullpen, which is not, where we obviously want to be. You can't help but think a number two starter like a Dylan Cease or a Ryan or some of these guys that were thought to be made available would have made a difference in a series like this, because this is kind of how you can see a playoff series going, where Crochet goes out and wins game one. And I know it wasn't Crochet in the series, but for my point, you go out, you win game one. And then this is what the rest of the series looks like, and you don't move on because there's no depth, really. There's no elite depth behind Crochet. I still think Bayo and, to a lesser extent, Giolito can give you a chance to win a playoff game, but this is what it could look like, and that's concerning. Giolito didn't get out of five. Bayo didn't get out of six. Bayo obviously went into that last inning, but he didn't have enough to get through it. And here we are again, where we're kind of asking the bullpen to do more. And what we talked about, Charlie, on this show exactly a week ago was how little they had to ask of the bullpen. And the results were an indication that we were going to be better with less, stress on that bullpen. So, this series, to the listeners' comments, really felt it a little bit, where they didn't commit as much as we were hoping they were going to at the deadline. And I've said that. I've said that I think we're still going to make the playoffs. And by the way, I still do think we're going to make the playoffs. Okay. But this series is concerning from that perspective, because, by the way, San Diego's a playoff team. So we're not going to see them in the playoffs unless it's the World Series. That would be awesome. But what if it is the Blue Jays, the Yankees, Seattle, who's really on fire right now? This is what a playoff series could look like, and what it could look like to be eliminated. So I don't necessarily think that's what's going to happen here. I think, there was a combination of a number of things. Rafael is playing second. It just doesn't make us better, in my opinion. I like Duran. And I think if Duran was our everyday center fielder because Rafael wasn't on the team or was nicked up and on the IL, I think we'd be fine.
Right.
But the ball in second or third inning that was slicing away from him, my only point is that Rafael would have ran that thing down. The route was not great. He was too flat. He needed to get depth and towards the fence to make that play.
Right.
So, we could do that with a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Let me do it in one other instance. Bases loaded. I know I already talked about it. So let me talk about a specific at bat within that scenario. Rafaela is like, and I like the player so much, and his July was outstanding. I'm glad that he's here. Team friendly deal. I want him on the team. He's so much fun to watch. But in today's at bat, he's up there like a little leaguer. He's just going to swing at everything. He had no plan of that at bat. And as soon as Adam got ahead of him, there was no intention to throw him another strike.
Right.
So he gets him to swing and miss at a slider. He does then lay off another slider, but then he swings at a fastball that's like ear hole high. Right. And it's like, there's no plan, man. There's no plan. And then Toro was kind of the same thing. He's all geared up. I know it's a big moment, but you're gripping the bat too tight. You got to take a deep breath. And then I thought Roman Anthony had a decent at bat. He chased a ball down and in slightly. I don't think it ended up being a strike. I think it was a sinker, but at least he had a plan, and he always seemingly does. But it's just, the situational hit. You want to bring a Hamilton bunting, come on, man.
Right.
Yeah.
I hear you. I mean, I totally hear you. And when I was seeing the Rafael, I actually, you know, no disrespect to like the people in the war room right now, but I had to mute it because I was like, crap, what do you mean? I didn't see that pitch yet. And then 15 seconds later, 20 seconds later, then I see the strike. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm behind. I've got some commercials still to go through and whatnot. But I watched the Sadon at bat, and he swung at one. It was inside, and it wasn't a smart play. It wasn't a smart swing. It's probably like 8 inches inside, and he swung at it. And yeah, you got a foul ball. You laid off another one, but then you saw a pitch up and in, like you said, ear hole high. It's like 8 inches out of the strike zone. Why are you swinging at that pitch? Stop trying to be a hero. You have Toro after you, and then you got Anthony after him. And Anthony looked at the best pitch of that at-bat, and it was an absolute beauty. 95, 96, right across the dish. He laid off the very next pitch, and then to your point, swung at a sinker low and inside. Soon as that happened, this one was done. This one was over. Their relievers struck out 14 of us in 8 innings. You talk about if you strike out 8 times or more, I think Mark had mentioned this before. Maybe Terry mentioned it. If you strike out 8 or 9 times, maybe it was Chris. I can't remember. And it's been mentioned multiple times. If you strike out more than 8, 9 times, 10 times, it's more than the league average. Their relievers struck you out 14 times. Today, they struck you out an additional 6 times in 2 1/3. Our relievers are good. Some of them, you have one closer that's great, right? A closer that's great. You have your relievers that are okay, mid, and then one that's above average. You got Garrett Whitlock in there. But I mean, you don't have what they have there. They had Adam, who's been locked in, Morihan, who's been locked in, Estevez, I believe is his name. He was locked in. He struck out 5 of us, or Estrada, excuse me, struck out 5 yesterday. Then you got Mason Miller. He struck out 3. I mean, dude, they struck out twice as many of our guys, and they did it in an extra third, 2/3 of an inning. And one of the walks that we got was technically a strikeout. That pitch was on the line. If you watch that pitch, the reliever started turning around, looked at Manny Machado, almost wondering, where's that ball? And he looks and like is bent over. Like, wait, where was that not a strike? Like, we struck out 13 times today. Their reliever struck us out 14 times yesterday. Their reliever struck us out 14 times. King was not great. He just came back. He had one extra strikeout. So that means that in 2 games, you struck out 28 times. You struck out an average, literally one whole game's worth of strikeouts in 2 games. That's not sustainable. Like, you've got to figure something out. This is a much better team than what we saw.
This weekend felt like the pre-July Red Sox.
Yeah.
Way too many strikeouts. It's not good enough. I've since forgotten how to pronounce his name. Arise,
you got it.
I love that guy. I liked him when he was down here in Miami. I saw him live. I love his approach. And I know you can't in today's modern baseball fill a team with guys like that because it's just not going to work. But to put a guy in a lineup that's just like going to be a thorn, he's going to cause a pitcher to go 6, 7, 8, 9 pitches. He's a weapon. He's a sneaky weapon. You know, he's never going to be like an MVP guy because he doesn't really hit for power. But, you know, I felt his presence throughout this series. And obviously he ended up having the big hit today early. That kind of the way Cease was going kind of made it difficult to get back in the game. But this is pre-July Red Sox mistakes popping up off the bag and doing, you know, stupid things that when they build on each other, it just makes it impossible to win. And then you just don't, you know, hit timely. So I do want to just go positive for a second. I know we lost the game, but Roman Anthony in the 9th yesterday with the double to left center in that spot, I thought was great for a young player that potentially could be a great, you know, player. The ball he hit, I think it was in the Astros series over a drawn in center fielder. It was a great, it won the game. It hit the ground. It was a single and, you know, game winning hit, but we're now stacking a couple of clutch moments here. You know, a guy, obviously we don't have a Devers in the lineup, a guy who would kill the Yankees, a guy that would routinely make those big hits. Ortiz was another guy, obviously, in Boston Red Sox history. And I'm not saying that that's what Roman Anthony is going to be, but let's just remember that he's 21 years old. And that was a big, big hit, you know? So, that was one positive. I can't think of that many others.
I mean, he had a great, top of the ninth inning, I'm like, crap. Suarez, who leads the majors, I think, with 32 saves right now, is now going to try to lock us down after we've been deflated multiple times in the game. I mean, King just, he gave you the game. That game was yours. All you had to do was get one more in there. And the double play, I don't remember who grounded into it. I don't know if it was Toro or Bregman or whoever. But, I mean, that game was yours. Bregman was also a man incensed. Two doubles, a walk, a single. He did everything he possibly could to light it up. And we just couldn't do it. At this point now, you got to look at players for the future too. And, you know, who fits into the long-term success for the future of this team. If you're not considering, like highly considering giving Bregman a three-year deal, maybe you tack on an extra year at $30 million. And maybe now we're looking at 3 years, $110 million, because he's still going to get 40 over the next two. I don't think he's going to opt out if we offer it an extra 30. I think if you don't consider him, you're an idiot. And I think if you're not considering extending Chapman to two, possibly, you know, 2 years minimum, maybe a third year, you're a moron, because you have the best closer in baseball. I understand that, not calling you a moron, but I know that there's people out there that are questioning it, not sure what they should be doing. You've got to sign other people. You've got to sign a closer. If you have the opportunity to get a closer in there that can just absolutely lock it down. We've talked about it before, Jeremy, where if you can throw 101 and 102, you don't have to pinpoint it. You don't have to throw it right on the penny there, right? So here's the thing. You have an opportunity to sign one of those two guys or both of those guys, you should be doing it. $300 million or just under that is now off the books. You've got the money. It can be done. We need to get another starter. You got to rework that bullpen, get Bregman back, re-sign Chapman. You got all the pieces for next year. Maybe you sign Cease as well in the offseason and you don't give up anything, which is much better than giving up Duran and getting Cease and Salas back. Salas can't stay healthy. He's a catcher who's hitting under 200 at, I think, AA. And Cease is in a walk year. We're going to give Duran, who's a free agent after 2028? No. AJ Preller is an idiot. He's a moron if he thinks that we're actually going to do that. And that offer was rejected swiftly and quickly. So, I mean, this is a situation that can very easily be resolved. And make no mistake, I'm not thrilled about the fact that we lost the series, but I'm not going to say we're done or we're screwed and we're out of it, right? We are going to face some hard teams. That's part of the season. That's part of the schedule, right? We're also going to be facing some cupcake teams that are not very good. And there's a really good chance that we could win 80% of those games. We could win 8 of 10 of those games. So it's going to suck. It's going to be a wild ride. We're definitely going to win between 85 and 90 games this year. I'd be shocked if we don't win a minimum of 86. I don't remember what my number was at the beginning of the year. Maybe it was 86, 88, something like that. But there's a really, really good shot that we're going to be able to do at least somewhat well in the playoffs. You got the Padres, you got the Dodgers in the National League. Both of those teams are capable of winning the World Series. But as far as the American League is concerned, there are a lot of flaws. Seattle has been surging, to your point, right? Houston, they got their pieces back. You got Correa, who did you see celebration today for his home run or no? I don't know if you did. He did the don't rip off.
I saw the home run.
Don't rip off my shirt because I got a microphone hiding celebration. I thought that was in poor taste. Now, Terry's going to say that there was no microphone, but I still strongly feel that there was. I hate Houston. That'll never change. I hate Houston more than I hate the Yankees, which is crazy after 2004, but here we are, whatever. We're going to be fine. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add about this series in particular.
Well, you threw a little bit at me about Bregman and Chapman. I'd like to respond to that.
It wasn't directed at you. So, it wasn't directed at you. But yeah, go ahead.
I'd still like to respond. So I'll start with Chapman just because I think it's a little less, there's less there. And look, you don't know what's happening behind the scenes. You assume Breslow has reached out to Chapman's agent and or spoken with Chapman directly about his temperature for being on this team. He has had a resurgence. His walk number is like miraculously out of thin air, 15 years down. Like, so there's something about the program that's benefiting Chapman. I'm not doing a multi-year extension on a guy his age. And I know he takes tremendous care of himself. So maybe that's something that I could be talked out of. But if you want to go extend him now and on a friendly number, then that's fine. You know, I don't have an issue with that. I the player's obviously been excellent. And to have the ninth kind of taken, you know, handled, and we don't have to worry about it, and he's not doing the thing that like heart attack closers like to do. He's just going out there and getting three guys out. I have no issue with that. Extend a year, same salary, fine. I don't have an issue with that. The issue with Bregman for me is I don't know exactly what the player wants. Like, I know he's enjoying being on the Red Sox. I know he wanted to be here to some extent. Obviously, he waited all the way through the offseason so that he could, you know, essentially be a Red Sox. But if you want to throw another year or two on that thing at $30 million per and make him take off the opt-out so you have some, you know he's going to be here, I don't have an issue with that. And that means even if the last year he's not the same player, that's fine. Teams do that. Like, you got 8 great years out of Pujols. The last two, he was a stick in the mud. So what? That's the price you pay to go get a superstar still in his prime. So the bigger issue there, from my perspective, is John Henry. Is he going to commit those longer term deals? Is he going to put, because he doesn't want that. He is so adverse to having to pay somebody 30 million years to essentially have a last year before his retirement thing. So I don't think we're going to hear from Bregman. He's way too professional. He's a veteran. I don't think he's going to go do the negotiate through the media thing and let us know. I think he's going to play baseball. I think he's going to talk about the team in its current state when he's in front of the media, and he's going to go into the offseason and we'll see what happens. But it would be negligent to not have already had those talks. I do believe they've taken place, and I don't believe they got to where the player was happy enough to sign the deal. But I do think that if you ask me right now, do I want both of those guys on this team next year? Yes. Could you do something to make it work where we know now? I don't have a problem with that. That's not how they operate, generally speaking. So
we'll see.
And to Jules's point, I do think again, Breslow feels it's more efficient to acquire players via trade in the offseason. So I would not be surprised in the least to see them revisit the Joe Ryan thing in the offseason. If the organization wants the player, they've shown they can go get him. We know from last year they wanted Garrett Crochet, they went and got him. They can do it.
Yeah. So Jules is thinking I'm complaining about the wrong things. Jules, I don't know if we're watching the same game, bud. I really don't. So I'm going to say this much, man. I was at the game. I don't think you were. I watched it again, literally from the opposing team's perspective. I doubt you did that. I watched today pitch by pitch, taking notes down, dude. I'm pretty sure I watch a little bit more baseball than you do. No disrespect. There are going to be things that you're going to disagree with me on. And in this circumstance, you're a little bit wrong. That's all I'm going to say. So yeah, Toronto may offer him possibly 2 years. We're going to put you up here for 2 seconds here. Maybe Toronto does offer Chapman 2 years. I still don't think he's going to go to Toronto. I think he'd still rather play here in Boston. I agree with your comment. I think that getting Joe Ryan is going to be a must over the offseason, either that or Dylan Cease. Whether or not that happens, it remains to be determined. We have no idea what Breslow and company are actually going to do. I hope we see something spectacular, because I really do think that this team is lined up and ready to just absolutely unload. Jeremy, you ready to get this next series underway?
Let's do it.
All right, dude. So unfortunately, as we talked about, obviously the Red Sox had a little bit of a stinker. It's been a little bit of a while since the Red Sox had lost back-to-back games. You actually have to go back to Philadelphia, where they lost back-to-back games, and that was July 21st and 22nd. So it's been almost 3 weeks, which is a pretty sweet streak. I mean, during that time, we also had a nice 7-game spot. We won 8 of 9 before losing 2 in a row. We now get to face Houston, and it's going to be at Houston for 3 games. You got Garrett Crochet against Christian Javier. You got Dustin May going up against Spencer Arrighetti. Arrighetti has not been lights out this year like he was last year. And then you get Walker Buehler against Hunter Brown. I have my own opinion about how this series is going to go. But Jeremy, let's have you go first. How do you think this first one is going to go? Again, you got Crochet against Christian Javier.
I mean, I'm going to continue to take Crochet the way he's been pitching. I'm not going to overthink it. I know tough series here. This team has rebounded in similar circumstances all year. So I think they go out and win game one. The Dustin May start concerns me. I think there's a potential for him to really blow and kind of blow up in our face, a la the Paxton deal last year. I don't think it'll be an injury. I think it'll be performance. I don't like the chances for him to go out and get through five and leave the game with us having a chance to win it. I hope I'm wrong. And then Buehler, you know, was much better in his last start. I do believe he's pitching for his spot in the rotation. Every two starts he makes, he's going to make $500,000. So he's pitching for hopefully something. If he can, I mean, he's not going to get a huge deal now, but he's pitching for his future in the sport. And he's a gamer. He's been accountable all year long. So I think you win two out of three. I think it'll be the bookends situation here. And I don't think we'll sweep them like we did earlier in the week, but I do think they're going to get back to playing better baseball. I think they'll hit. And, you know, like I said, look at this like a playoff series. If we get there, you win the Crochet starts. You just got to find one other guy to get you a game.
I've been saying it all year. As long as you have Crochet in that rotation, you just need to split the rest of the five games. You need to win two. You can lose the other two. You're going to win 60% of the games if you win the Crochet start every time. I'm not going to vote against Crochet. Christian Javier has only pitched seven times this year. Garrett Crochet has more wins, I think, as a streak than Javier has games pitched this year. Crochet's last loss, and we've talked about this before, it was in May. He didn't lose in June. He didn't lose in the month of July, and he hasn't lost so far this month. I'm not all of a sudden going to say he's going to lose in the Houston series. So he's going to get number 14. I think there's a chance for him to get 10 plus. The second game, I know I'm on Lonely Island, but I think that Dustin May is actually going to get his first win as a member of the Red Sox. Spencer Arrighetti has been absolutely awful. And of course, there's of course an opportunity for Arrighetti to do fine. But if you look at the numbers, he's allowed five runs in two straight. He couldn't even go four innings against Minnesota or Miami. Minnesota, depleted team. Miami, also not a great team. He couldn't even get past four. I want to say that you're going to get at least four or five from Dustin May. Now, the real test is going to be game three. You got Walker Buehler going in there against Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown is a favorite for the future, Cy Young. Guy's got 160 punch outs. He's striking out way over one per nine or one per inning, and his K9's definitely over nine. He has a whip under one, an ERA of 2.5. He's got nine wins on the year. I think the Red Sox are a better team than the Houston Astros, but I do think that Hunter Brown is shaped up to be in a better spot than Walker Buehler, even though Walker Buehler did allow no runs in the six innings he pitched against the Padres. He did have a couple of ugly innings, only four punch outs. The times of him getting, you know, 98, 99 blowaway fastball strikeouts, those are gone. But I think that if there's one game to lose or to give, it's probably Buehler. Even if Buehler gives you six, seven innings and allows one or two runs, there's a chance that Hunter Brown goes seven or eight innings and he allows one run on two, three hits and strikes out 12.
Yeah, you're concerning me there. So Hunter Brown, from a starting pitcher, has a 0.98 whip, under one.
Yeah.
Talk about pitching without stress, man. So
right.
His name is on Tuesday. He's only pitched 13 innings. You don't really know. He's got a 7.5 ERA. His numbers are terrible. I'm starting to be a little bit concerned we're going to lose this series with the way the matchups look, but I'm going to say the Sox are going to win two, but they're going to win the first two and drop the third game. That's what my final answer is.
We're aligned.
Yeah.
But as always, Jeremy, as always, even if they do end up losing game two, you did reserve the right to change your opinion. I'm just going to remind the listeners of that. You're the only person that's allowed to do that. What do you think? I mean, I want to go back to this one too, because they talked about this as well. This is any play that gets reviewed, if it gets overturned, the manager cannot come out and argue that call is an immediate ejection. Do you agree with that rule?
I do. And the reason is because the manager would be yelling or arguing with someone who didn't make the decision they're upset about. So in the instance in the Hamilton play in the Astros series, he was called safe on the field and the review goes to New York and they overturn it. You're going to go yell at the umpire for getting it, for agreeing with your team's position. I mean, it's not logical to me. And so for that reason, I do. Now, if the umpire comes out and says the call's been overturned, he's safe, like let's say at a play of the plate, you and they don't explain it, I think you should be able to go over, like, explain it. Like, was it a blocking? Did he beat the throw? Did he prematurely block the plate? Like, that's a different scenario in my opinion. But if there's a clear and concise explanation for the review and the overturn call, then I agree that the manager, you're yelling at someone that didn't change the call.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, the decisions were made in New York, and I mean, I watched it on the largest screen TV in San Diego, and it was as clear as day that he got pushed. And people can be sitting in front of their 80-inch TVs, you know, like some of these folks that we have commenting and whatnot, saying certain things. Carry on with your thoughts. That's fair play. Fact of the matter is, I saw it live. That just, regardless of who makes the decision, right, in New York, if it's not the umpires and the umpires are then told this is the answer, there's really no point to you coming out, because the answer, it's a decision that can't be overturned. You can't change their minds. It wasn't their decision. So I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to that one. I mean, it's going to be an interesting series for sure. But hopefully the Houston series ends up in a better spot than the Padres one.
Yeah, man, I'm not going to overreact at this point in the season to one series. They've been a very, very good baseball team. They've been,
absolutely,
you know, they've had the highest winning percentage in baseball. I don't know if they still do, but at least through that July run into sweeping the Astros, they had the best team and best record in baseball in that time period. I for one, am not going to overreact to the way this thing went. Now, I could overreact on Wednesday, but for now, I'm optimistic.
Hey, that's fair play, dude. Fair play.
I'm expecting them, for one, to go out and get a win behind Garrett Crochet, who is expected to be awesome again. And so that's my position. I'm not going to overreact because of one series.
Fun. Awesome. We want to thank all of our loyal listeners, to our friends and family and extended family and friends that have also commented and spent their Sunday afternoon with us. We hope that the Red Sox obviously have a better series in Houston. Go Boston. And for those looking for some fun articles, Bastards of Boston Baseball.com. Forgot the website for a second. If you want to check out some great articles, everyone have a great one. Take care.